Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, Lori Vallow. It's always about the money. Second, a Kentucky lawmaker thinks that he's above the law. Third, finally, Oregon and Louisiana now have to provide unanimous jury verdicts in criminal trials. Imagine that. And Bill Cosby wants to go home. And our dumb criminal contestant of the week, winner, and our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already done so, we would ask that you please hit that subscribe button and hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content. As always, leave us a comment below on what we discuss here today. First, Lori Vallow. For those of you who don't know, Lori Vallow just seems to keep getting bigger and bigger issues every day that go along. And for those of you who watched our episode that we did last week where Lori Vallow just can't get a break, for those of you who left comments and sent me nasty comments, that's called sarcasm, ladies and gentlemen. Some people just take everything very literally. If you couldn't read the sarcasm, I don't know how else I could have done it. Now, Lori Vallow, for those who do not know, is in an Idaho County jail right now. She has two charges of deserting her two children, JJ and Ty Lee. She was ordered by the court to return or produce those children, and she has yet to do so, hence the result of the criminal charges for the criminal abandonment of children. It's a very rare charge ever used in the state of Idaho, but they've managed to get Ms. Vallow extradited back from Hawaii, where she was vacationing with her new husband, Chad Daybell, because they had just recently been married, you know, just a couple of weeks after the death of his wife, Tammy, who the Idaho Attorney General is looking into the circumstances surrounding Tammy Daybell's death. Really strange circumstances. Well, as we all know, Chad Daybell is Lori Vallow's husband number five. That's right, five. So Charles Vallow, husband number four for Lori Vallow, they were going through a divorce, and he was ultimately killed. Charles Vallow was in an altercation with Alex Cox, who is Lori Vallow's brother. During this confrontation, Alex states that Charles came at him with a bat, and he ultimately had to shoot him. It was ruled as self-defense, and now the authorities in Arizona are taking a look at that. So you have Lori Vallow being looked at as it relates to the death of her husband in Arizona. You have Chad and Lori Vallow being looked at as it relates to the death of Tammy Daybell in Idaho. Plus, she has this case ongoing. She's being held in custody. She has a bond reduction hearing set for April 24th. The things just keep getting worse for her. Now what comes out is the fact that during the pendency of the divorce with husband number four, Charles Vallow, he received an email notification that basically his password and identification were changed as it related to a life insurance policy for him. He became aware of this, basically had to go through several steps, sign notarized documents, etc., stating that this is him and that he did not authorize Lori Vallow to change any information on that life insurance policy. The policy ultimately went to Charles Vallow's sister to basically do what she deems appropriate and hopefully for any, you know, children or any things that they would have set up. But Charles Vallow wanted to make it absolutely clear it was not to go to Lori Vallow whatsoever. Now, what's interesting is the fact that Charles Vallow wanted the audio recording that was made and hopefully is still available to see what was said to get Lori Vallow to convince these people to change the information on this particular policy. We'll see if that's still out there and available. But it clearly shows, and if you go back to the 12 undeniable truths from a criminal defense attorney, one thing you will learn that I state in there is it's always about the money. People will do the most bizarre things for money. They will lie, cheat, and steal, and even kill somebody if they think it's enough money. What's the value of that? I don't know. I've handled cases where people were killed over nonsense, the cost of a ramen noodle soup can. But when you're talking about a $1 million policy, and if Lori Vallow had moved on and didn't want to be in that relationship any longer, certainly makes people question and want to investigate. Lori Vallow is in a ton of hot water, and I think it's only going to get deeper and warmer for her. And I think she needs to get comfortable to that jail cell because that is where she is going to be for a while. Next on the docket, a Kentucky lawmaker thinks he's above the law. Representative Derek J. Lewis is a state representative from the great state of Kentucky. And on Thursday evening, he was arrested and charged with DUI, driving under the influence. Frankly, not that big of a deal, particularly because so many people in life have received DUIs. They're getting much harder to get these days because of little things like Lyft and Uber. So if people get one, they really are in a spot where they've really made some poor decisions. Well, this state representative apparently was contacted by a police officer because his truck was in a ditch next to a fence. And clearly, when the officer made contact with him, he observed some indicia of being impaired. Once again, not that big a deal. And I'm not passing judgment because he's either a representative or a someone that has a DUI. He exhibited the normal indicia that you would see and be boilerplate on just about any police report: bloodshot, watery eyes, slurred speech, odor of an unknown alcoholic beverage, the standard stuff. You might as well just type it in beforehand because it's there. But what this state representative, Derek J. Lewis, said was, first of all, he says, I'm not going to do anything for this police officer, in a little less polite language than what I just said, which, once again, not that big a deal. People say that all the time. Unfortunately, police officers have to deal with the public, and usually most of them exercise great restraint. No, what gets the attention for Representative Derek Lewis from Kentucky, the great state of Kentucky, is that basically he tried to pull rank, so to speak, on this officer and said he is ordering him to call the sheriff for that particular jurisdiction, Sheriff John Root, because they were going to resolve this matter because, you know, he's a state representative and all. And needless to say, and good for the police officer, he did not comply. He treated this individual as any other individual as the law should be. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what separates our country from lots of other countries in the world, where you can simply call and say, hey, I am so-and-so, or I know somebody, and they go away. Under our system of justice, everyone should be treated equally. And frankly, I probably wouldn't even have mentioned this, but this person is a state representative, and it's his first time, and maybe he has a little bit of air of power going to his head and thinks it's important, or maybe realized he made a mistake. But apparently this guy has a business. He owns a pharmacy, so I'm assuming he's a pharmacist. But the reality of it is he tried to be treated differently because of his position. That's why he got the attention of Crime Talk. This guy should have just said, you know what, I'm there passing laws. I have to do them better and cleaner than everybody else. He did not do that in this particular situation. He tried to pull rank, even just taking his lumps. Now, the Mr. Lewis, Representative Derek Lewis from the great state of Kentucky, he has himself an attorney. We like people getting their attorneys so people's rights are protected. And they've issued a statement basically saying he was just having a long day because he was out at some protests or something that particular day, and it was just a long day, and he was not treated fairly and that he was not intoxicated in any way. We'll never know for sure because there was no BAC. Maybe there'll be a body-worn camera for this particular officer. My hat's off to this officer for not giving into the pressure of this guy trying to say, well, I'm a state rep and I can do whatever I want. No, Representative Derek J. Lewis, you're held to a higher standard because if you're going to make laws that tell people how they should live, you have to do it better and cleaner. Next on the docket, that's right, Oregon and Louisiana now have to provide a unanimous jury trial in the criminal system. Imagine that. Imagine that it has taken this long to get there. Well, let's talk about how we got there. This is a case of Ramos v. Louisiana. In 48 states and federal courts, a single juror's vote to acquit is enough to prevent a conviction. But two states, Louisiana and Oregon, have long punished people based on a 10-2 vote verdicts. In this case, the petitioner, Evangelisto Ramos, was convicted of a serious crime in Louisiana court by a 10-2 jury verdict. Instead of the mistrial he would have received almost anywhere else, Ramos was sentenced to life without parole. He contended that his conviction by a non-unanimous jury and was unconstitutional denial of his Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial. Well, guess what? Just like some of those cases that have been so impactful, it's because somebody sitting in a jail cell somewhere and said, hey, I don't think this is fair. This isn't correct. All right? Justice Gorsuch delivered the opinion of the United States Supreme Court with respects to many parts of this particular opinion. And he held that the Constitution's text and structure clearly indicate that the Sixth Amendment term, trial by an impartial jury, carries with it some meaning about the context and requirement of a jury trial. When you read these opinions, and this one is a little thick, but not as far as a lot of them go. It's only, you know, I don't know, that big. But when you have somebody like Neil Gorsuch, Justice Gorsuch, writing this opinion, it's interesting because they go back as an originalist. And what's really also surprising is who went along in the majority opinion, as well as who dissented in this particular case. Justice Alito and Kagan dissented, and Justice Roberts also dissented, but not for what the reasons you may think. So basically, late 1800s, Louisiana, right after the Civil War, was setting up their state judicial system, and they wanted to maintain the white power that was existent at the time, but they knew that they were going to have to allow minorities to be on the jury panel eventually. But they figured, oh, there'd be no more than one or two minorities on the panel, so therefore we'll have a non-unanimous jury verdict, and that'll be okay, good enough for us. In the early 1900s, Oregon did the same thing because there was a great influx by the KKK during that time period, and they wanted to keep minorities off the jury panels as well and figured, well, at most, there won't be more than one or two on there, so we'll set up this structure. And then you think, well, my gosh, hasn't anybody challenged this? Well, yes, they have. And back in the early 70s, there were a couple of cases that went up to the United States Supreme Court. And that case was Apodaca v. Oregon. And the Supreme Court at that particular time said, well, yeah, federal courts, you have to have it. We've all decided it. The Supreme Court had looked at this at least 13 times in its history and said a unanimous verdict is the same. But they said, well, maybe there's this position where maybe the 14th Amendment as it relates to unanimous jury didn't necessarily apply to the states via the 14th Amendment, the due process equivalent for the states from the federal system. The court ruled in a very dysfunctional way in a plurality decision, said, well, basically Oregon and Louisiana can still keep their system because, you know, who are we to change these types of things? It's so chaotic and it would cause chaos to do so. Well, Louisiana kind of read the handwriting on the wall, and they actually passed some legislation changing this law recently. Oregon was going to do the same thing, but they didn't. Now, what shocks me is, first of all, this went on for, you know, 120 years in most cases, and Louisiana and Oregon couldn't get on board. Nowhere between then and just recently, when they knew the handwriting was on the wall, did anyone from Louisiana or Oregon say, hey, maybe we should have a unanimous verdict system when it comes to felonies. Little surprising there. Little surprising people didn't demand a little more action. So then we get, in this particular case, Mr. Ramos sitting in his cell in Louisiana says, I'm going to challenge this. And ultimately, the Supreme Court says, yes, everyone's entitled to a unanimous jury decision. But Justice Roberts, Kagan, and Alito dissent. And what do they dissent about, really? It's like, you know, we could still have this dual system going on, and everything will be just fine. But what we're really concerned about is stare decisis, all right? That's precedent. That's what you learn about in law school. And that comes from a Latin maxim, stare decisis et non quite mover. And I'm sure I mispronounced that. But that what that translates into is it means stand by the thing decided and not disturb the calm. It's supposed to reflect and respect the accumulated wisdom of judges who have previously tried to resolve the same problem. So in our system, we like precedent. We like to not change laws. We don't want the courts to have just whims of, oh, today this is what it is. Tomorrow it doesn't mean anything. We like consistency. You see that in business. You see that in the law. Consistency is good. It tells people how to operate. There's when people go to court, the judges rely upon, well, what's happened before this? Most of the time you go to court, it's not anyone reinventing the wheel. It's already happened before. There's just little nuances, new little facts that come in, and new case law is developed because of that. And so the law will change, but the courts are very hard-pressed when they don't want to change the law and reverse their previous decision because it looks like, well, we made a mistake. But we do that all the time in our history. You remember? It used to be that you could own slaves as property. It used to be separate but equal. And those were all affirmed in the courts and then later reversed. So when something is wrong, it needs to be corrected. All right? I remember a law professor told me once, says the law becomes its own opposite and yet still maintains itself as a rational body of discourse. What does that mean? I don't know. No, just what it means is the law develops over time, and if the law is wrong, it will change, and it will have to explain why the law is changing, not just get up and say, well, it's changing because I've changed it today. So the three dissenting opinions were really there as it related to reversing Supreme Court decisions. And that'll be significant because Justice Roberts, you know, he really likes stare decisis, doesn't like to reverse stuff. He'll rewrite case law, or he'll give great deference to the legislature when what they meant when drafting these. When it depends on how you look at it, it should only be as it relates to what are the words on the paper. It doesn't matter what anybody's intent was, only what made it on the paper. That's it. The other thing that's really interesting about this is they go through the fact that a unanimous jury decision was around some 400 years before it even was discussed here in the United States under the British common law. It was just something that was ingrained in the legal system throughout. And so it's very odd to me, and I think you have to look at the rationale. The court writes about why these systems were set up, and what's really disturbing is the fact of how long it was maintained. How many legislators from Louisiana were down there and never bothered to propose a bill to change it? All those legislators in Oregon who could have changed it, could have put out and said, hey, let's do this to be on board, as opposed to maintaining a inherently prejudicial system to keep minorities off of judicial service, and yet nobody did it. It took some guy in a jail cell saying, I'm going to petition this to the United States Supreme Court. The dissent in this particular case was also very disturbed about how this could open up a floodgates of litigation as it relates to people seeking post-conviction relief. And the majority opinion in this said, don't worry about it. You guys, that's always the red herring. It's not going to be as bad as you seem. When they changed and made retroactive the federal sentencing guidelines, it wasn't as bad as everybody thought it was going to be. This is not going to be that bad. And frankly, guess what? If it wasn't a unanimous jury verdict, if it was 10 to 2, 11 to 1, guess what? It would have been a mistrial anyway, so the state should have had to redo it. But no, they tried to do it on the cheap. They kept saying, nope, it's fair, it's fair, it's fair, when they knew it wasn't, and everybody knew it. And now they're going to have to pay. So I say, get those juries ready, ladies and gentlemen, in Oregon and Louisiana. You've got some work to do to make up for your past. Next on the docket, Bill Cosby wants to go home. As you all may know, Bill Cosby was convicted and now sits in a Pennsylvania jail cell. He is serving up to 10 years for his 2018 conviction for drugging and sexually assaulting a Temple University employee in 2004. Well, Mr. Cosby is not in good health. He's had to have a couple of surgeries. He's nearly blind due to glaucoma and apparently is going around in a wheelchair. Mr. Cosby did not qualify for the governor of Pennsylvania's Corona 19 relief because he was a sexual offender. So Mr. Cosby, through his attorneys, are asking basically for clemency. The governor in each state has the right to grant clemency. They can reduce a sentence. They can pardon somebody if they choose to do so, just like the president can only pardon or reduce sentences for people related to federal crime. Governors have that power. They've always had it. It's one of the clemency powers that each governor has in their constitutions. So that's what the Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania is being asked to do for Bill Cosby. Don't think that Mr. Cosby's going to get any clemency, even though the strongest argument that the representatives, the attorneys for Mr. Cosby can come up with are the fact that he's really old, he's in poor health, and this was meant to be a prison sentence, not a life sentence or a death sentence, which is possible if Mr. Cosby were to get sick, given his conditions. We'll watch and see what the governor of Pennsylvania does, but I think Mr. Cosby will continue to be pushed around by fellow inmates in his wheelchair. Our dumb criminal contestant, that's right, our dumb criminal contestant from last week, Playboi Carti, you know, the rapper that got pulled over, driving his Lamborghini, found drugs and guns in the car, which his buddy took, but then told the police officer that he effed his daughter and that his wife is pretty. Needless to say, things went downhill from there. Next on the docket, the dumb criminal contestant of the day and a potential contestant for the winner of the dumb criminal contestant of the week. Well, if you've ever heard of TikTok, it's apparently a new app on the internet that you can get where people put up very short clips. Only ones that I've seen seem to be people dancing and people really showing how ignorant they really can be or that those around them are. But for some reason, you sit there and watch a few of them, and next thing you know, you've spent like 45 minutes. It's a complete waste of time. But our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Ashley Stoopy, and her girlfriend got into a scuffle where the police were ultimately called. And why were they arguing? Yes, that's right. They were arguing about TikTok videos. It was not clear from the police reports what video or what about the TikTok videos that they were arguing about. But ultimately, it led to such an altercation that the police ultimately were called and the police responded, and Miss Stoopy got arrested. So Miss Stoopy is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. I know whether you're arguing with your partner, your spouse, whomever, sometimes you think, what the hell are we arguing about? Because this makes no sense whatsoever. And here it's a TikTok video that was probably 20 seconds of complete garbage. And now you're looking at being a convicted domestic violence abuser. Miss Stoopy, let it go. Hey, thanks for watching. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.